We are live with the legend of D. Jones, Mr. Dylan Jones from Vision Warriors. He's going to tell us a little bit about his story, and we're about to have an amazing podcast. This is...
Welcome to the Most High Show, a show about recovery, spirituality, and all that. Produced, posted, and hosted by people in recovery who have strength and hope and want to share it with you. If you or someone you love is suffering, we want you to know you are not alone. This is the Most High Show.
And we're back. This is the Most High Show. I want to give a special thanks to Mr. Dylan over here for coming out and being willing to tell his story live on Facebook for everybody to hear. Give a little bit of strength and hope to everybody, you know. So what's going on, man? How you feeling?
I'm feeling good, man. I've been really working with my recovery in therapy and stuff. I'm in drug court, Cherokee County Drug Court. And it's really helped my accountability and, helped me fight through life's obstacles and stuff that I've been going through, you know. Recovery is a serious thing, and I just got to stay engaged, man. So I just figured I'd do my part and be here, share my story with anybody who's listening that might, you know, help or y'all might get some inspiration from along the way. Just doing my part, man, because it always helps giving back.
I feel you. So let's jump right into it, man.
All right.
What was your childhood like? Because I know for me, it was like I had a fairly good childhood, you know? So it was kind of like, how does somebody that had a very good childhood become a drug addict? You know, like kind of go to the dark side, if you will. You know what I mean? And it was kind of like just kind of nobody saw it coming.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So like, I don't know if that was the case for you or not, but let's just touch on that for a little bit.
My childhood, you know, it wasn't... I'd say that the one word I could use to define my childhood was confusing.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't the greatest, you know? I mean, I was always with my mom from birth, and she would work... you know, little 9-to-5 jobs or you know, whatever she could do to take care of herself and me, because it's all she had at the time. And I remember I'd stay with babysitters, or I'd go with my grandfather, and while, you know, I'd even be with him while he's at work. He hauls cars for a living. And I remember, you know, a lot of the times I was with him when I wasn't in school. But my mom, you know, around the time I was 4, she met a guy that she worked with, and they had got married. And so for a long time, you know, being young, I still thought, I was like, well, this guy's my dad. So I called her husband, it's her ex-husband now, but I called him dad. And we lived, like, right over in Woodstock, and... up until about the age I was 8, I thought that this guy was dad, you know. So mom and dad, we lived in a little house. I had a little sister. And so my childhood was cool, you know. I had Xboxes and games, or not Xbox, Nintendos and bicycles and stuff. I went to school, you know. It wasn't nothing bad. I had everything I needed. And then one day I was playing basketball at school. And after one of my games... this man and his wife with their son approached my mom and me, and my mom goes on to tell me, well, this is your real dad. And so...
that was probably really confusing.
Yeah. Like,
what's going on?
Yeah, so I was like, he's my dad. But really, when I was that young, like I said, I had a sister, a little baby sister, but then I seen that there was another boy with the man and the woman, and I was like, okay, I got my real dad, but I got a new brother. I got excited, and I was like, that's cool. So I just took off with him, and we were talking and got to know each other. And you know, I started going to my dad's and stuff like every other weekend, and we'd go out to movies and everything. And then I just, you know, about the time I turned 9, my dad gets a divorce from his wife, and my mom gets a divorce from her husband. And they wanted to try and get together and try parenting me. We moved to Alabama for a year, and then after, I'm not exactly sure what happened while we moved back, but we moved back to Georgia, and my grandpa had bought a house in Ball Ground. And so I lived there for a little while, or for a long while, actually. Ball Ground is really like my hometown. I stayed there for like 14 years, but for about 5 years, when we first got there, my mom and dad were together, and then they split up. So around that time, I was 13. And then my mom, she met another man and got pregnant with him, and then left and kind of went to go live with him. And I just told her, I said, I didn't want to leave. I wanted to stay in Ball Ground. I was already in school. I was about to start high school. I just didn't want to leave where I was already rooted at.
Yeah.
So then I get into high school, and I ain't got no parents telling me what to do. I had my grandpa, but he got up early and went to work. Didn't ever wake me up to go to school. I really think my motivation for getting up every day and going to school was my girlfriends that I had.
There you go. He said plural.
Yeah. Yeah, because I went through a bunch of them, man. So my motivation for getting up and going to school is because I had friends and girlfriends. And so I go, and then, you know, I got expelled from high school because I had weed on me. And I bought some weed from somebody and then sold it to somebody else to try and make a little money. And so, like, around the time I was in high school, my freshman year, I started smoking pot. And then I got to go to the alternative high school, and I stayed going there because of my girlfriend again. And I wasn't really, like, you know, doing drugs except for smoking weed and drinking. But then I got expelled from that school for 3 months. And so when I got expelled, I had a lot of time on my hands. Like I said, I didn't have no parents. My grandpa was always at work. Like, he'd leave at 10 in the morning, not come home till 2 in the morning. Because, like I said, he drives a rollback, a tow truck, and he hauls cars for a living. And he still does that to this day, you know. But my whole life was like that. So I had my own house. Pretty much I'd have people in and out coming over. And then I got introduced to meth, which was my drug of choice, when I was about 15 years old.
As early as start meth, I feel like.
And yeah, and that's like, that's pretty much my childhood. You know, it was okay. It got a little confusing, went back to being okay. Then when my dad left, my mom kind of felt like she had to have some kind of man in her life. And then when she got pregnant, she didn't really have a choice but to be with that man and try to father the, you know, parent the kids that she had coming along the way. But I stayed at my grandpa's when I was about 14 by myself, and that's kind of like when I lost my way. Mm-hmm. I didn't have nobody showing me which way to go. So, and I don't blame nobody. You know, I know that, hell, I was never taught how to be a man. I was never taught how to do certain things. I've had to figure a lot of stuff out on my own.
Yeah.
And that's how my family life was growing up.
That's crazy. So it was a lot of kind of moving around, confusion, and I wouldn't say abandonment, you know what I mean? But, I mean, in a way, yeah, right?
Yeah, in a way. Like I said, I don't blame nobody for just leaving. And my parents, they did the best that they could with the choices they made. But, yeah. You know, I often think, you know, I'm supposed to go through these things in life. It's going to make me a stronger person.
Mm-hmm. So you started doing meth at 15.
Yeah.
And you got, what, 6 months? In 4 days, you'll have 6 months, right?
Yeah, I'm 4 days shy of being 6 months sober.
That's huge, man.
Yeah.
Is this your first time, like, trying recovery?
It's my first time with treatment and my first time actually, you know, going to work the steps with my sponsor and trying to actually do recovery. I've been abstinent from drugs before.
Yeah.
You know, for a couple years, and then I would go back to them or something in a relationship would happen, and I would, you know, that stab to that heart would just make me relapse on drugs. But so abstaining from drugs is not a part of, is not the only part of recovery. It's not.
It's a whole mindset, really. It's realizing that it's not the drugs or the alcohol, but it's actually you.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's you that that's the problem. It's drugs and alcohol are just a symptom.
Yeah.
You know, Brittany said, my first best friend, you've always been brilliant.
Yeah, so when I lived in Ball Ground, when I first moved there, I lived on this little road called Blackwell Street.
Yeah.
Right? And, you know, I lived at the top of the hill, and I would always ride my bicycle flying down the hill, you know, whoo, and then, so once you, right before you get to the bottom of the hill, there's a little house that was across the street from mine, and this girl and this boy lived there, and it was Brittany and Michael. And so I got to meet Brittany, and she was a cool person. Yes, she was. We were the first friend. Like, she was my first friend when I moved to Ball Ground. And, you know, ever so often I'll be posting stuff on Facebook about how I'm doing good, and she's just in super – she's a good support.
Just always so supportive and everything. Yeah, so it's good to have friends like that.
Yeah, she's an awesome friend, dude.
That's crazy.
Appreciate the shout out, girl.
What's up, Brittany? Yeah. So, all right. So you moved here. Stayed in Ball Ground. You got 6 months sober coming up, right? You're in Vision Warriors.
Yeah.
Right. So let's jump. We're gonna jump around a little bit in this podcast. It's gonna be kind of. People are going to have to pay attention a little bit, you know. You want to keep people's attention, right?
All
right. So what we're going to do is let's talk a little bit about Vision Warriors and how your time there has been and just kind of what you've learned from that whole thing.
So like I said, like, just abstaining from drugs isn't the whole part of recovery. And when I first – I just got out of jail in October.
Yeah.
And so there was with a girl that I was with, and we were living in her grandparents' basement, and, you know, I was going to do the drug court thing, and, you know, I was pretty sure we were going to stay sober and nothing was going to happen, but she had warrants and stuff. We was coming back from drug court one day, and the insurance on the tag on the car had lapsed. So the tag was suspended. Cops pull us over, find out she had warrants, took her to jail. Then her grandparents was like, you got to find somewhere else to live.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm in drug court, and I'm going there every day, head held high, not letting nothing like that get to me. Even though I hit kind of a bump in the road, you know,
yeah.
I was just sitting there focused on what I had to do next. So I got information from a couple guys in drug court. And they told me that they lived at a sober living house.
Mm-hmm.
Man, my first thoughts on that was, holy crap, now I got to go live in a sober living house. Like, I got to live sobriety.
Which, that's the last thing I want to do right now, man.
Yeah, I said, I just want to go home. I just want to chill when I get out of this drug court shit.
Yeah.
Well, it totally, like, blew my mind. Like, when I first had that thought, like, man, it's a major drag. But I said, you know what? I'm going to be 100% involved in my recovery. I'm going to become addicted to it. I'm going to eat, sleep, breathe, recovery.
Sometimes that's the only way to do it, man. And it really is the only way to do it.
Right. Honestly. Yeah, because you got to have that accountability when you go home, and then you got to be able to know that you're going to do the right thing whenever you're not at drug court around those people that are holding you accountable.
Yeah.
You know, you can't just go home and live in the shadows. No. So when I go home now, it's to a sober living house where everybody there is cool with me, man. It's awesome. And it's not just cool with me. They just cool who I am. They appreciate me as a person, want to see me succeed. We all try to build each other up.
Yeah.
You know, the Bible studies, I had to go to those the first 30 days I was there. And at first I was like, man, I can't wait for these to be over so I can go to work on Tuesdays and not have to, you know, make a little more money. Well, now I kind of miss going to those Bible studies because it's like, it's like an AA type Bible study, and yeah. I'm not there. And Christian even asked me, he was like, I want you to lead one. But I was like, I'm going to be at work, dude. I can't. But now I want to, you know. I want to be more involved in Vision Warriors as much as I can. But I still got to work and still got to pay dues and stuff.
And you still got to pay bills.
And I'm going to tell you, dude, it's like sober living America is like almost $200 a week. Whereas like I've got it with, you know, Vision Warriors. I don't even pay, you know, nowhere near that. And it's a great opportunity to just get up on my feet and go to work. And like I said, I've got people there that they support me
well. We actually met at Vision Warriors.
Yeah.
Right? With that whole side-by-side week, which that was an incredible experience for me because, you know, I know you're religious, and we were talking about this a little bit earlier. You know, I'm spiritual. You know, like, I'm not too religious, but going into Vision Warriors and, like, seeing how everybody does everything, it kind of, and we were talking about this earlier, it kind of opened up my eyes to maybe, like, you know, like, actually being able, like, being open to it, you know, being open to religion and everything like that. So it was really cool to come in there and, with me being how I am, like, actually being open-minded to, like, seeing how other people, you know, worship their God and find faith in almost anything. You know what I mean? It was a cool experience for me. And yeah, so shout out to Vision Warriors.
Yeah, we just did incredible place. Sunday night, we just had Free Chapel come out and do a worship service with us. Man, that was off the chain. For real. I was out there helping people park their cars and stuff. And like, I come inside, and I was just wearing, like, a hoodie and stuff. And I was like, man, I respect Vision Warriors so much that, like, I had to go change clothes and, like, put on, like, a nice shirt and shoes and everything. Because I want to better represent my home and the place that's helping me. I don't want to make them look bad. So I got in there, and I got to talk to a bunch of people that are in support of us. And, you know, so that's where I'm at with it, man. If you ain't trying to be sober at home as much as you are in any program you're trying to do, it's not going to work.
Yeah. It's a way of life.
Yeah, you got to change your whole lifestyle.
You truly do have to live sobriety and recovery. You know what I mean? Like, me working here, you know, and still going to meetings and everything like that. I went to NYP last night, and that shit was – that was an incredible meeting. You know, NYP's it's all about young people in recovery too. So it was like really cool to go out and, you know, reach out to some people and talk to them. So let's jump back a little bit, right? So I know we were talking about your family and everything. We were talking a little bit outside about like your relationship with your parents now, right? And your relationship with just kind of like touch on that a little bit. Like, what's it like now that you're sober, now that you're in recovery? You know what I mean? Like,
so, for a long time, after my dad split up with my mom, I think, you know, he moved to, like, Arkansas and was gone for a couple years. He come back around, and he moved back to, like, where he's from, like, the Douglasville area, Hiram, Villa Rica.
Yeah.
He met a woman after, you know, staying in some people's basement for a while. He met a woman that he fell in love with, and they had gotten married. And then, like, I went to their wedding. And then after their wedding, I remember I just, I only saw him maybe once or twice after that, but it was just brief, and it was really whenever I needed something. And, you know, I didn't really have a strong relationship with my dad. And then when I was, you know, I tried to push blame on people and stuff, just thinking like, well, I'm this messed up because, you know, I didn't have my parents and stuff. But, like, that whole saying that I was saying earlier, like, if you know, your parents can only do to the amount of what they have. You know, they did their very best.
Uh-huh.
But so I kind of stayed around mom because now my little brothers, they're older, right? So she, after she had the kids, it's been 10 years, you know? And so they're older now. And I would stay either, you know, going, living at my mom's for a little bit and then going back to Ball Ground. And then, you know, me and my mom, we did drugs together. And, you know, so that's like a hard thing now for me. I've had to put boundaries up between me and my own mom. And I still love her. I still want the best for her.
Yeah.
I do think I have resentments towards her, but it's just because I'm trying to do what's right. And I don't know what she's planning to do in her life, but I don't think she can support me because she's not doing what's right.
Yeah.
As for my dad, me getting in this program, me trying to do what's right,
mm-hmm.
he has completely changed my hope in this program. And without him, I probably would have given up already. Him and his wife have got my back, and they're not just giving me some kind of handout. They're not saying, okay, well, here's everything you need. You just make sure it goes where it's got to go.
Yeah.
Without challenges in life, we don't grow. My dad was just like telling me, he was like, son, you know, I mean, I'm 27, mm-hmm. 3 years shy of being 30. I'm not a kid anymore. I shouldn't be treated like a kid. And he's not going to, but he's still going to be there for me in situations like this my entire life because I am his son. And now that he's more equipped to help me, you know, he told me, you know, he's like, you just whatever you need, you just let me know. And the moral support is what I'm thankful for the most. My dad and his wife, they've celebrated the holidays with me, which is awesome because I can't remember the last time. I think it's been over 13 years since I've celebrated holidays with my dad.
Oh, that's an amazing feeling, isn't it?
Yeah.
Being able to actually remember, first of all.
Yeah.
You know, like what you did during the holidays and then being able to spend it with family and like with your dad, with your parents.
Yeah.
It's an incredible feeling.
Yeah, my dad, you know, he's got my back, but he wants me to work for this because, like I said, if we're not challenged in life, we don't grow. So I need these challenges.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm not here alone. Like I said, if it wasn't for him, you know, talking me through this and being there for me, I would have given up already.
That's crazy. Leslie, actually, just asked you, how does he deal with his mental health every day? How do you deal with, because I'm sure being an addict, we don't just go through addiction. You know what I mean? Yeah. It's not just addiction that we suffer from. It's mental health. It's a lot of growing up. I was always depressed before I even touched a drug.
So when doing drugs, it changed my belief system. Like, okay, so let's just use this as an example, not just me personally, but this could be anybody. You're going down the road and someone cuts you off.
Yeah.
And you get mad as hell. You're like, oh, road rage, right?
It pisses me off still.
You're like, that mother, he wasn't thinking about me and what he could have just done to my car, what he could have, you know, I could have suffered my life because dude wanted to cut me off and be reckless. That's your belief right there. So that's where you got to stop and you got to understand. I believe that it's everybody else's fault. It's not mine.
Yeah.
Because that guy cut me off. It's his fault. It's not mine. But what if, say, for instance, people are in a hurry.
Mm-hmm.
People, maybe he's late. Maybe his wife's in the hospital dying. He's trying to get to her for the last time he ever gets to see her. Yeah. Tell her he loves her. Maybe their kid's on the way, and they're trying to rush to the hospital. So if you believe, like, okay, well, that guy must be in a hurry, and you don't let it get to your, you know, you don't get angry over it.
Yeah.
If you change the way that you believe about a situation, it's going to change the way that you react to a situation. And in doing that, that's a way, that's a really good tool to have, or really good thing to have whenever you're dealing with mental health. I know I personally suffered with anxiety for a long time.
Yeah.
And I started having these panic attacks one year in my life where every day I thought I was like dying of like a heart attack, or I was just having it, you know, rough. And I didn't know what to do. I went to a doctor. I was on antidepressants, and I started, you know, like taking pills and stuff to try and control my anxiety. But with anxiety, that's living in the future. You're too anxious about what's going to happen next.
Yeah.
And your fear, it creates fear. So living in the moment, living in today, and only focusing on what you can do today, and learning to be that way every day, is number one, what you got to do. And then number two, when you feel like your fears are a little easier to overcome, start exposing yourself to the things that you're scared of. Because with exposure, as long as the thing that you're exposing yourself to isn't going to kill you or harm you, your brain's going to say, oh, well, that didn't hurt, or it wasn't as bad as I thought. And you're going to retrain your brain to believe that whatever it is that caused you fear and anxiety, mm-hmm. is going to be okay. And that's what I had to do for a whole year. And then I just one day stopped taking the pills. One day I overcame it.
That's great. So it's a lot of perspective, a lot of perspective change, and a lot of living in the moment.
Always, always living. If you focus on your past, if you dwell in the past, you're depressed. If you're always in a hurry to live tomorrow, I mean, you're anxious.
Yeah, I like the saying personally, and I'm gonna curse here for this, right? But if you have 1 foot in the present and 1 foot in the future, then you're just shitting on. Or if you have 1 foot in the past and 1 foot in the future, you're shitting on the present.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, if you're thinking about the past too much, or you think about the future too much, like, you're just not going to be, today's not going to be good.
Right.
You know, and today's all we got. Yesterday already came. Can't change that. Mm-mm. The future, we can only change with what we do now.
Yeah. You know what I mean? Those are good positive mantras to live by, man.
So it's kind of like, it's just kind of some cool things to think about. Ashley Smith said, I love you, Dylan. You are my inspiration.
Yeah, she a good girl, man. She's in recovery, too. She's had another option down in Duluth. And, man, yeah, she struggles, man. She just got out of jail. And I just want you to keep your head up, girl. For real, I keep doing what I got to do on my part to help you and to help anybody, you know, who's going through it, too. I'm not the best at this. And like I said, it's my first time, but I'm gonna try my hardest.
Hey, it only has to be. It doesn't have to be your last time, man. I mean, it only has to be your first time, your only time. You know.
Yeah, because I often
that's a decision you get to make.
I'm like, I'm not saying nothing bad about anybody being in recovery at a certain age, but I don't want to be
50 years old and going back.
Yeah, I don't want to be any older than I am dealing with this stuff.
Mm-hmm. I think we're at an advantage. You know, I'm 25. You're 27, right?
Yeah.
So, I mean, we're at an advantage, man. If we get this shit now, like, it's only up from here.
Yeah.
You know, so, and Lord knows I've struggled. You know, I've went out a couple times. man, you don't have to do that. You know, that was a decision that I made. It wasn't nobody forced me to do anything like that. You know, it was a decision that I made because I decided that I didn't want to live out of God's will.
Yeah.
You know, I decided that maybe going back out would be better for me at that time, but really I wasn't focusing on God.
Yeah.
So with that being said, let's talk to the newcomer.
Yeah.
What would you say, right, to somebody that's just coming into the rooms or just coming into this life of recovery? What would you say to them? I want you to look in that camera right there, man. Look directly into that camera, and I want you to tell the newcomer what this life can have for them.
If this is your first time getting into this way of life, this lifestyle of trying to recover your life, do not give up. Continue to search for the knowledge, for this education, and thrive on it. Don't give up on trying to learn the next thing you got to do to recover and to help you. When you start backsliding, it means you're giving up. When you relapse, you're giving up. If you're truly serious about this, do not give up and take every minute of your time to seek some kind of guidance, whether that be God and his knowledge and wisdom that's in the Bible, whether that be somebody that's older than you and somebody that's already been through stuff like this that can teach you, whether it be blogs on the internet about recovery, whether it be going to AA meetings and talking to a sponsor. Don't ever give up, man.
Powerful words, man. Is there anything else you want to touch on or anything like that, man?
You know, I just gratitude, man. I'm so thankful that I get to do this, and I will continue to do my part, man, because I'm grateful.
Yeah.
For my second chance in life, my second chance at getting to actually find out who I am and getting to know myself. I just want to give a shout out to everybody out there that's watching, or anybody that watches this later that's in recovery or that's never had to deal with it before. It doesn't matter. The message is, you know, just keep your head up, keep moving through life. We're gonna get it right. We're gonna get it right.
Hey, man, thank you so much for being here. Love your story. You know, it's a powerful one. Hopefully we'll get to have you come back and share a little bit more of your story.
Oh yeah.
You know, it's cool having you around. I think you're gonna be around. You're gonna try and be around every Thursday, right?
Yeah, I'm gonna try and come out here a little bit every Thursday that I can.
No, so we'll definitely have you back on.
Work on some projects, get creative with it.
Who knows? Maybe we'll go live later on when you're tatting me and Christian up.
Okay. You know? Yeah. Some Most High tattoos.
Yes, sir. We're getting a crown on us. Now it's on live, so me and Christian have to do it. So we can't back out now.
It made the verbal verbal commitment now.
Hey, I want to thank you so much for coming out, man. I want to thank everybody for listening. What's up, Darren? And don't forget to download our app for more podcasts like this, more documentaries, everything recovery related we are trying to touch on. Most High Media. Don't forget to follow this man on Instagram. What is it?
Legend of D. Jones.
Legend of D. Jones. And is the Most High Media app. Don't forget to follow us on Instagram also, The Most High Show. You're already watching on Facebook, but you know, if you're watching it on the app and you don't have us on Facebook, go ahead and hit that like button on Facebook at The Most High Show. You can follow me on Instagram at The Coast, T-H-A-C-O-A-S-T. And I hope y'all have a fantastic rest of your day. Maybe we will see you guys later on for another live. Yeah, man.
Yeah.
Appreciate you for coming out, you know. And we'll catch y'all later.
See ya.
Peace.